Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
You're listening to The Tillage Podcast with the Irish Farmers Journal.
Hello, and you're very welcome to this week's Tillage Podcast. I'm Siobhan Walsh. I'm recording on Thursday morning, the 2nd of February this week, so you know, for your grain markets and weather report later on. On this week's show, we report from the CAFRI UAS-UFU Arable Conference that took place in Greenmount this week on Tuesday, and I was up there and it was a really good conference and we'll report from that. As well as that, I'm not going to leave you alone on blackgrass. I have someone from the UK talking about methods of control and different research that has been going on. And of course, we'll tell you what's in this week's paper. And we have the grain markets and weather at the end as well. Now, before we kick off, I hope some of you at least are listening to me from a tractor or from your car as you go from field to field as you crop walk, because we have had some nice drying over the past week. I know we haven't had it in all parts of the country, but certainly there is plenty of people getting out to the fields. And I think this weekend, hopefully, we'll see a lot more people getting a bit of work done. Good to see there's plenty of farmyard manure on the move. People bringing it out of sheds and into fields. Bits of ploughing going on. I saw beet coming out during the week. There's sprayers on the move. There's hedge cutters moving. And look, it's a good start and fields are drying well. I suppose with that as well, then I've seen tramlines where maybe a bit more patience was needed. There's a bit of harm done there. And look, they're going to be like that for the year. So if ground conditions aren't good enough, just, you know, try and be patient. I know it's difficult to do. There's a lot of work ahead for this spring, particularly with the lack of winter crops that are gone in some areas, but be patient where you can. So I suppose to start off, as you prepare for spring, one of the news stories that we have in this week's paper is that Tierlan planted double production of their gluten-free oats. So that might be something to consider as you're choosing your spring crops. You might have a break crop to plant after, and there could be an opportunity there to get a premium crop into your business. Also on the news pages, we have a story from the Tillage Conference. So John Spink is talking about work that's going on the life cycle assessments of Irish grain. So that's really good to hear, because, you know, we all know how important that is, and getting the carbon footprint of Irish grain right and being able to compare ourselves, I suppose, to imports that are coming in and put a value on Irish grain. Staying with grain, we'll go straight to the CAFRI conference now. And I spoke to David Udall at the CAFRI conference, and David works for the AHDB. So here's what David had to say about grain markets. David, you're here at the CAFRI conference. I suppose, giving a bit of perspective on grain markets, no one really knows where they're going to land, but certainly the AHDB at the minute, I suppose, reading your reports, you're kind of neutral on prices at the minute, maybe bearish for the meantime, but in the medium term, you don't see them jumping too high.
No, I think we're in a position where the market has priced in all of the information that it has at the moment. There's nothing new that's happening, nothing really majorly exciting. But as we go through the spring, because there's still the uncertainty from Ukraine and the lack of supply in the world, that tight stocks as well, if there's any kind of issue, and there always is a weather issue through the spring, that will create some uncertainty and push the prices up.
Yeah. And yeah, you did talk about, you feel like the market has kind of hit a low and maybe we're looking at kind of 230, 250 as the prices for the coming year.
Yeah, I think as looking at the futures market, that kind of 220 seems to be the low end of it. And I think, as we say, we'll probably see the futures market pushing closer towards 250. So if looking at, you know, prices coming into Belfast, that probably pushes them more towards the 260, 280 kind of mark by the time all of the freight and costs are added on as well.
And we're back to looking at weather events, really. And you talked about maybe a weather event having a big effect on prices in the springtime.
Yeah, I think where we're at the moment, you know, it's a bit dry in Argentina. That's kind of keeping things a little bit supported. It's an area people are concerned. Yeah. Then really, we're just going to go again, looking back at the classic areas of Russia, Western Europe. They're the two areas where I've got not necessarily a concern from the weather today, but we're expecting to see slightly lower production from Russia this year. So if they see any kind of weather event that exacerbates that, that's when you'll see all of the investment funds piling back in because they know there's no stocks in the world. Mm-hmm. And suddenly that's when the price starts to be supported.
Yeah. And if you had one piece of advice, I suppose, for farmers going into the season, like you described farmers there in your piece, you know, they have to be agronomists, they have to be finance managers, they've a big job ahead of them. So I suppose to make grain prices a little bit easier, what could they do?
I think the main thing is have a plan, have a strategy. And when you're making a decision, I'd always write down the reason why you made that decision. So when you decide to sell, you've got your reason. So if the market then changes one way or another, you know that on that day when you made that trade, you were making it for the right decisions for your business at that point.
Thanks so much to David for talking to us. And there's more on grain markets. Davey Wright, our Northern editor, has a piece in the news this week from that conference. And of course, the Grain Trends report is in the back of the paper as well. Now, we're going to change tack a little bit and we're going to move to foliar nutrition. And at the CAFRI conference, Phil Burrell from Yara spoke about foliar nutrition and he was talking about biostimulants and everything as well. But the first point he made was to get the basics right and mind your soil.
Whatever we do in agriculture, we need to get the basics right. When it comes to what we can influence is crop nutrition. We can't influence anything else. But you can as farmers and agronomists. If your crops aren't performing because your drainage is poor, there's only one person who can sort that out. pH is a real, real bugbear of mine. Because so often we get pushed in front of a soil analysis to be told what P and K do we need. And that's arable soils at a pH of around 5.5. Worth pointing out that a pH of 5.5, over half of the phosphate you're going to put on is going to be locked up. There really is no reason. There's a reason why we talk of pH 5.5. It's because it's the point when the majority of nutrients are most available from the soil. So, you know, my argument often is when people show me a pH, you know, a soil test, and it's 5.86, you know, spend £20 on lime and unlock £200 worth of nutrients. You know, we need to get the basics right.
So good to see a foliar nutrition talk coming out and starting. He's saying you fix your problems from the ground up. You know, he said in parts of it, and I think it comes up in the next clip, if you see the deficiency, it's too late. And really, we have to try and fix your soil first. And if your soil is in good condition, you know, it takes out a lot of the need for some of the inputs that we're putting on. So here's what else Phil had to say.
It's all basic stuff. Obviously, I'm here to talk about foliar nutrition and what you can do. Again, you've got to get the basics right. There is no point, as can be shown by those two rows, of not applying the correct amount of fertiliser to the crop. Because whatever we do to this with foliar nutrients, we are not going to bring it back to where this potato crop is. Again, it's the basics. Where we need to get our mindset with polynutrients is around optimizing. We get everything else correct, and then with polynutrients, we can take it to the next level. Saying from where I'm from is you can't polish a turd, but you can roll the turd in glitter. But I can assure you, if you squeeze it, that's what you can do here. You know, and some people will come to you and say, don't worry about that, cut your MPK back, and just put this stuff on an alpha can, this fancy spray. No, you need to get the basics right. And then we can optimize, and we can address deficiencies we can't see. One thing, again, that really frustrates me is you read literature. At the first signs of deficiency, apply a product. By the time we've seen the deficiency, it is too late because yield is already limited. But actually, I like to use livestock as an analogy for crop nutrition. Because if you think about livestock, and I'll class ourselves in that, if we ensure we've got the right vitamins, etc., at the right time, we generally don't get ill. A crop should be the same. If we keep a crop healthy, it will naturally build its defences. Now, I'm not saying to anybody, don't put any fungicides on and just put nutritional products on. Good luck controlling septoria. Where I am, yellow rust. But we do know that if you keep a crop healthy, it will naturally build its own defences. And that's where foliar nutrition can play a place. But only, and I keep emphasising it, only when we get the basics right. We have to start there. One thing we've seen through recent projects, and this is just some examples from the YEM project, and the lines may not be overly clear, but we can see that with well-nourished crops, they are generally the higher performing crops with higher consistency. And ultimately, that's what we want. We want consistency of yield. We don't want big yield one year and not so much the next. We like consistency. But this is trend data from the tissue analysis from the YEM project. And it's looking at the top five oilseed rape crops versus the bottom five performing crops. And you can see with a range of key nutrients, there is a distinct advantage. The higher yielding crops have sufficient nutrition. That's not waiting until it's deficient. Key message. There is things we can do with foliar products. When we think of roots, ultimately what we're trying to do with a crop is build a big biomass. A big biomass generally equals higher yield. But every structure needs a sound foundation. And do we spend enough time looking at the roots? With nitrogen, it's easy. If we don't put it on, we can see it. With sulfur on cereals and grass, if we don't put it on, we can see it. If we don't put phosphate on, can we see it? Not unless you dig a hole. When you think of how phosphate behaves in the soil, we've mentioned pH. It's readily locked up. High pH, low pH. Phosphate is particularly immobile in the soil, which is why placement of phosphate works so well. When you think of crops like maize, potatoes, now interest back in sugar beet, oilseed rape starter fertilizer. Phosphate is very immobile in the soil, so placement works. If you go back to the 1980s and you find any machinery brochure, every drill was a seed and fert drill. Then we moved to min-till, which, depending on your definition, could have been anything from a disc scratching 1 inch deep to a Simba Solo where the legs would go in as deep as the frame and as deep as the contractor would pull it. We went down the Bardistad drill route. We're now going back again, and a lot of drills being sold have seed and fert to place the fert to get it away. The Scots laugh because they never stop doing it. They've always placed fertilizer down with the seed. The other thing with phosphate is it becomes very immobile at cold temperatures. So we can actually have an impact here with phosphate through the leaf. And this is just an example. Again, I like pictures. Treated, untreated. And we see it with foliar phosphate products. Because we are applying it directly to the leaf, we are bypassing all those interactions within the soil.
That's great. I think a lot of people at the conference really enjoyed Phil's talk. And of course, it was a lot longer than that. But that was just, a sneak peek at his talk. But look, a great conference organised by CAFRI and UAS and the UFU. And thanks to all for that. Now, on this week's Tillage Pages, we report from Chagas's National Tillage Conference that was held last week. So there's bits and pieces about fungicides and disease and a grass weed survey that was carried out that I think you'll find the results of really interesting. And also, of course, on those pages, we have the spring beans recommended list. They came out on Friday, I think. The article went up online at the weekend. And look, there's three varieties on that recommended list. Lynx, Caprice and Victus. And Lynx is topping out on yields. But look, have a look at the list. See what variety suits you best. And look, hopefully plenty of you are going to be sowing beans this year because it makes a lot of sense. No nitrogen, higher payment. And, you know, the value to the ground and the next crop as well is just brilliant. So we should all be certainly considering beans. Now, next up, I spoke to Colin Lyde back a while ago. Some of you might remember we talked about a trip to France with Lemkin. And Colin Lyde, he's head of agronomy at Agri in the UK. And he's done a lot of work on blackgrass in trials in the UK. And here's what Colin had to say about blackgrass. And Colin was really interested and he had so much research done. And I think you'll get a lot out of this. We're over here in France with Lemkin, but yesterday you gave us a presentation at the Lemkin Centre and it was on blackgrass and you're doing trials over in Stillonga in the UK. So tell us a little bit about what you're doing over there first.
Yeah, so I mean, basically we started at Stillonga, which is a site near Huntingdon 23 years ago now. Yeah. And basically looking at ag chem trials to start with herbicides to control blackgrass. It became very obvious very quickly that actually resistance would become a problem. Yeah. So we started to look at cultural control and then looking at cultivation techniques and rotational techniques and all sorts of other things to try and control blackgrass in a cultural way.
Yeah. And one thing that was very clear from your presentation yesterday is you have trials from going from, I suppose, straight into direct drill from ploughing. And that had a big impact on blackgrass populations.
Yeah, I think the most important thing is to start with, we use the plough as a reset button. So you imagine in a bad blackgrass situation where we found in the trials over the years, plough once and then go shallow for the next 4 or 5 years was the best control of blackgrass. But of course, now what we're trying to do and everyone's looking at seriously is to try and move away from maxi-till situations into min-till direct drill, environmentally, economically, maybe. But of course, on heavier land with blackgrass, that becomes a bit of an issue. So we've certainly gone from various phases from a plough-based system straight into direct drilling in 1 year, so A to Z in the transition.
Yeah.
That caused issues, I have to say, with straw management became more of a apparent. A gapier establishment of the wheat crop. And of course, what that does then allow is the blackgrass to fill the spaces. So in fact, in 1 year, going from a plough-based system into direct drilling, we had more blackgrass and our yields were lower. So it's going to be a transition over time rather than just purely thinking, okay, stop ploughing, go direct drilling, sell everything else, buy that direct drill and go for glory.
So advice for people then, how do they make that transition? Do they start to use a time cultivator? What's your advice to people?
Well, but basically, in a nutshell, people are then trying to move their soil movement less over years. So in other words, from going from a plough and to sort of cultivating at shallower depths, I'm still managing to move the straw into the soil profile with some tillage system. And then progress towards being able to direct drill successfully. But you have to have the soil structure right. You have to keep an eye on that. So in other words, you know, whilst you're moving to a gradual less cultivation, you have to be very aware of compaction issues and weatherproofing that seedbed, particularly where you have high rainfall.
Questions coming from farmers then, you know, where I suppose like we have a lot of grass weeds problems in Ireland. So rotational ploughing is often asked as a question. Where does that fit in there to that system?
Absolutely right. So, I mean, that would be fundamentally our advice. Mm-hmm. So if you have a bad black grass field, introduce the plough, get that under, keep that seed then well out of the way. So keep it down there, then go shallow. So it's a combination of using a plough judiciously in a programme. And particularly if you have, also you, in amongst this, you need some spring cropping to make it work. Yeah.
Delay and drilling.
Absolutely. Delay weed drilling in the autumn, which in some places is easier to say than others.
Yeah.
Or, of course, go to spring cropping for a while to break the cycle and also to help break the straw down to go direct drilling.
Yeah. Blackgrass is a problem in Ireland. I think it's a much bigger problem than we know it is. And you showed us trials yesterday in that presentation and you were using all the blackgrass chemistry available to you in England and you still had huge populations. So maybe just tell us what those populations were. So, you know, the farmers know that, there isn't a fix for blackgrass in a chemical can.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's wholly correct. So, yeah, we were looking with the residuals we're using, we currently get to maybe 50 to 70% control of blackgrass. But if you've got a lot of blackgrass, that's still a lot of blackgrass left. Yeah. So that really is not the answer. It's a nice end to a story, but it's not the beginning. Yeah. So you need to control the blackgrass culturally. You need to think about, I'm afraid, still using a plough where necessary, but be judicious with its use and then go shallow.
Yeah.
But the blackgrass population simply is no longer. We were starting with 800 ears per square metre years ago. 100 ears per square metre of blackgrass is a one tonne a hectare yield loss in wheat. So, yeah, it doesn't take long to work out. Typically, a lot of UK growers are at 300 to 400 ears. It's 3 to 4 tonnes a hectare yield loss. Yeah. Now, that's unsustainable.
Yeah.
And so you have to start thinking about thoroughly about the cultivation technique, the rotations, bringing in spring cropping to get a whole package, really.
And thanks to Colin for that. Now we'll move to grain markets. And looking at grain markets, they have recovered somewhat this week. Just the French Matif price finished, the December price finished at $273.50 on Tuesday night. And as I went to print, that's the price that went into the paper. As I see, after we went to print, that dropped by about €2. It went down to 271.25, I think, last night. So look, overall it's improving. So that 273.50 was up €6 on the week before and it brought the price €1 above the same time 2 weeks ago. So look, we're kind of back to the price we were at 2 weeks ago, and same things kind of feeding into the market. You know, we're hearing about the drought in Argentina. Last week there was a rally in prices on Thursday, and it was the weather in the US was thought to be playing into a lot of that market sentiment at the time. And so just to give you an idea of where prices are, native barley for November, a dry price, of course, is unchanged from last week. So it's still at €260 per tonne. So that kind of makes sense when we think of what's just happened in the markets. They've been up and down, but look, they're kind of back to the same place where we are as well. Rapeseed has improved a bit. So rapeseed price for November has risen by, it rose by €5 per tonne since last Friday. So showing a bit of promise there. And I suppose what's behind that is that the drought in Argentina is continuing to support prices of oil seeds and soybeans comes into that, and rapeseed then is affected as a result. So look, the full grain trends report is in the paper. And as I said earlier on, there's more in news as well on that. So we'll move on to weather now. So just looking at the Met Éireann forecast, and on Friday, it's going to be similar to Thursday if you're listening today. Dry weather in many areas, very little rainfall, patches of drizzle, temperatures 11 to 12 degrees, quite breezy, and Friday, no frost Friday. Saturday, a band of rain will move southeastwards across the country on Saturday, moving in from the northwest through the morning, highs of 9 to 12 degrees. Fresh and gusty southwest winds turn northwesterly as rain clears, and lows on Saturday night of 0 to -3 degrees. So you might need, if you've been out spraying during the week, make sure you've topped up the antifreeze In the sprayer. Forecast cold frosty start to Sunday and then Monday to Wednesday, changeable conditions in the early days of next week with rain moving in from the Atlantic on Monday night in a moderate to fresh southwest airflow. So look, mixed there in the forecast, but for the next few days anyway, hopefully, certainly a bit of time to get work done. But as well, I know, look, there's parts of the country where people haven't been able to get out yet, and it's important to say that as well. So that's it for this week. Thanks to you, of course, our listeners. Thanks to our guests and to the conferences that we attended this week. Thanks, of course, to Claire and Jerome back at base for editing. I hope you get out to the fields over the next few days. If you do, stay safe and keep the tillage flag flying.
We hope you enjoyed this Irish Farmers Journal podcast. You can find all our podcasts at farmersjournal.ie/podcast and on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.